And then there were two. The long college baseball season is winding down. Two teams left. Who's going to win it? The Wolverines or the Commodores? We'll go to Omaha and get a preview of the College World Series Championship Series. For NBA free agency around the corner, Pelicans will be busy. They've got money to spend. Who are they going to spend it on? And you may like it, you may not like it. One news service has predicted LSU's football win-loss record for the 2019 season. We'll tell you who, and we'll talk about it today, Monday, June 24th, 2019.
That is drilled. Deep to right field. Ball is sucking. If it stays fair, it's gone. And that is a fair ball. A two-run home run for Alvarez. And it's 8-0 Astros. Alvarez's third home run of the series.
And he's hitting 306 in Oklahoma City. And he pops it up into center field. Drifting on back. That's more than a pop-up. That's a walk-off home run. The ball kept carrying and carrying. And Smith hits it out. And the Dodgers win again on a walk-off home run. This time it's Will Smith.
And Baez hits one in the air to right field and deep. Back goes Conforto. It's got a chance. Goal! Homer Javier Baez. Listen to this crowd.
Welcome. That crowd was nothing like the crowd at Fulton Street when Zion was drafted, right? But hey, baseball, baseball, baseball is upon us. And tonight, the College World Series down to two teams. Michigan. I didn't see this coming. Vanderbilt, saw that coming. Winner, best two out of three. Good afternoon, welcome. You've dialed us up, and we appreciate that. However you may do it, we appreciate it. My main man, CD, producer extraordinaire back in the 237 Root Studios, the master control suite. He's pushing. If you saw it, you wouldn't believe it. There's so many buttons to push and screens to look at. It takes a far smarter person electronically than I could ever be to do that. And he does it, and he does it with proficiency. And I'm thankful for it. I get intimidated by it every time I look at it. I don't want to look at it anymore. I just don't. It's scary to me. But he's great at it, and I appreciate all that he does. And welcome. It's Monday, kind of a little mist, a little rain here and there, but overcast skies. Maybe the temp dropped a little bit. Maybe we're needing some of that as we're coming down the stretch in the month of June. Next week is going to be the 4th of July holiday, right? So here we go. Coming up on the program tonight, yes, we will head to Omaha. Ben McDonald covering the games for ESPN, the former LSU Tiger. He'll share his thoughts on, I think it's the biggest surprise in baseball. Michigan, really? They play baseball. Well, they got a good coach who learned from the coach on the other side for Vanderbilt, Tim Corbin. Vanderbilt's got the best team. They had 13 draft picks. They've won 33 of their last 36 games. Are you kidding me? 33 of their last 36. They are on a proverbial roll. So we'll take care of that. Scott Kushner will join us. We'll, for the Advocate, he's their NBA analyst, and we'll talk about a bunch of things with him, including his thoughts on the draft, and more importantly, what's coming up in free agency. But Zion Williamson continues to talk. I mean, he has been wheeled around the city. He's been helping build with new basketball courts and just doing everything, ingratiating himself with the fan base, and the fan base just loving every second of it. And, you know, he's from South Carolina. He went to Durham, North Carolina. So he talked about kind of being close to home.
Yeah, it is very comfortable knowing that I'm pretty close to home, that I can get on a short flight and go back to South Carolina anytime.
Short flight. Yeah, go get that. Get that private jet now, big fella. You've earned it. Coach K, very well respected, not only in the collegiate ranks, but as the longtime coach of the USA Olympic team. Zion, what's it like working with Coach K?
Working with Coach K was a different experience because he's coached all the greats. So, I mean, he would tell you, I don't know who told you guys you were good, but you're not. he'd be like, I've seen Kobe, I've seen Jordan, I've seen LeBron. You guys aren't there yet. So, I mean, he always kept us grounded, and he would always tell us to just be ourselves and just try to keep the game as simple as possible.
Pretty good, and that is true. You come in as a hot shot recruit. Excuse me? I've coached Jordan. I've coached LeBron. I've coached Kobe. I've coached all these guys. Stockton, Malone. Yeah, okay, good for you. All along, David Griffin, very smart, the vice president of basketball for the Pelicans. Very smart in trying as best he can to take some of the pressure off of Zion. He's always called it, this is Drew Holiday's team. Zion's just a 19-year-old pup. He's got to learn the game of basketball on the NBA level, and no better tutor than Drew Holiday. So Zion talked about Drew Holiday.
I don't really know too much about his game, but I know that he's for his team because that's what everybody says, and I can't wait to get on the court with him.
Well, Zion, he's a defender. He had his best season ever last year. Back-to-back seasons of being healthy. He's dynamic. It appears through everything that, you know, the coach-player relationship, so important. So important. I mean, there's a lot of great players who don't mesh with the coach, and the coach is gone. Zion and Alvin Gentry have connected. Why is that, Zion?
I think we connected because he just saw that I just wanted to play basketball. Like, the media and stuff wasn't on my mind. I was an 18-year-old that wanted to get on the court and hoop.
Want to get on the court and hoop. Here's Alvin Gentry's explanation on why he and the number one pick in the draft and one of those players that comes around maybe once every 10, 20 years at best in Zion, how these two have clicked and formed a bond together.
Well, first of all, we're both Southern guys, you know. Secondly, I think he's got a great basketball mind, but he also appreciates the history of the game. So it's really funny. We talked about really players from the 70s, even when I was in high school and taking visits to college. He knew some of the guys that I was talking about, and that came from, you know, Lee, I'm sure. We talked about that. But, you know, he's an easy guy to talk to. He's an easy guy to discuss things with. I mean, I think he's going to be a joy to coach, really. You know, he plays extremely hard. He's all about the team. So when they say he's a coach's player, you know, the way we related, I think it's easy to see how that can be.
And finally, Zion struck a chord with the fans, the fans of New Orleans. When he said at the end of his declaration on draft night, anything you want to say to the fans of New Orleans? And of course, he said, "Let's dance." What was that all about, Zion?
Me and a group of friends, we went to see Avengers Endgame. And if you know me, Thanos is my favorite character. So, you know, Captain America's shield's broken. I'm like, well, we're about to win. Like, for once, the movie's going to be realistic and the bad guy wins sometimes, you know, because he's the strongest. So my friend Axel, he's like, hold on. All of a sudden, all these superheroes who disappeared 5 years ago just start appearing. And I'm like, oh, I might lose. And he looks at me, he goes, let's dance. Let's dance.
And that's where it came from. Avengers, The Endgame, which, by the way, my daughter and I went to see and prior to her surgery, and maybe the longest movie I ever sat through. But it was good. It was exciting. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It was longer than Titanic, I believe, which is a blur from the distant past and much more exciting and much better in my mind because I'm an action kind of a guy, and I liked it. And my daughter liked it, so that's what it's all about. So there you have some Zion. That's in the future. Tonight, it's all about baseball. As the College World Series gets underway, Michigan and Vanderbilt, best 2 out of 3 from Omaha. When we return after this first time out, we'll go to Omaha. Ben McDonald, former Tiger, now TV analyst in Omaha, will join us and give us his thoughts on the up-and-comer against the gold standard. Next, the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, Acadiana's.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game.
Welcome back. It's been a very, very long marathon of a college baseball season, and now there's two teams left standing, and they will both battle it out. Best 2 out of 3 for the College World Series championship. It's the rising power, Michigan, versus kind of the gold standard in Vanderbilt. I don't know. Maybe he's getting his mail sent to Omaha, Nebraska. But he's been there for a while calling all the games and doing a tremendous job. Our good friend, the former LSU Tiger himself, Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us on game one day. Ben, how's Omaha been for you, buddy?
Well, it's been long. You mentioned it. You know, it's a marathon out here. And, been out here almost 2 weeks now. But we're down to the final two and excited about, you know, Michigan and Vanderbilt, and best 2 of 3 coming up starting tonight at 6 o'clock Central Time on ESPN, and they're going to battle for the national title in the next couple of 2 or 3 days.
Vanderbilt, you've said it all along in our conversations, probably the most talented team in college baseball. 13 players drafted. They've got some blue-chip talent, sophomore and freshman. They're 57-11. This sounds like LSU back in the day. 57-11, the SEC regular season and tournament champion, and they won 33 of their last 36 games. You called it. You said this Vandy team was the team. What is it about them?
Well, I think it's a lot of things, Jordy. One thing is, you know, they're starting 4 seniors in the everyday lineup. You don't normally see that at Vanderbilt. Typically, those guys are gone after 3 years because Coach Corbin recruits so well, and they're always pro prospects. But players like Ethan Paul, who led the SEC in hitting this year. Infante, the other senior, has really come on after some struggles last year. J.J. Bidet was a 4th pick overall in the draft this year to the Marlins. It's a team filled with a lot of experience and a lot of talent. You know, a team, look, they're going to play for their 3rd title in the last 6 years, coming from the SEC. And it's just a deep team that, Coach Corbin does such a wonderful job. When you combine the experience with the talent that they have, I mean, look, 57 wins this year. Playing in the SEC is just, I mean, it's an SEC record. No, I mean, it ties an SEC record. They win one game here. They've won more games than anybody in SEC history. That's how good they've been. And you mentioned, look, they won the SEC overall title. They won the SEC tournament title. They did something never done before, too. They beat every other team in the SEC this year since we went to 14-team field. They did that as well. And now they got a chance to win the national title. So it's a historic season for Vanderbilt in the making.
33 of its last 36. My goodness, did we see this coming from Michigan? They're playing for their first national title since 1962. You follow it far more than I do. Was this kind of expected, or is this like maybe one of the bigger surprises in college baseball?
No, I think it's one of the bigger surprises. I mean, look, if you go back just 3 weeks ago, they were one of the last 4 teams to even get in the field of 64. So you just barely get in and you make a run like this. And look, they've done it against everybody. They go to Corvallis in the regional. They take on Oregon State, who was defending national title. They knock them off. Then they go into UCLA for a super regional, who was the number 1 overall national seed. They knock them off. And here they are in the Omaha, and they're down to the final two. And so it's a team that's just it's firing on all cylinders right now. There's some talent there. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's some second-round picks and some third-round picks in there. But still, at the end of the day, I don't think anybody saw this coming. They certainly wouldn't have been one of the last four teams picked to get into this. But the truth of the matter is they played outstanding. It's the only team here that has a pitching staff in the top 10 in the country in ERA. And look, Jordy, they've done this with three pitchers. They are where they are right now using three pitchers the entire 3-0. Nobody's done that since Georgia did it in 1990 when they made it to the finals. And so, and from an offensive standpoint, they're firing on all cylinders, and they're the only team in the SEC that has not made an error here, or rather in the College World Series, that hadn't made an error in the College World Series, too. So the defense is outstanding right now. The offense is really kicking, and the pitching staff has been phenomenal since they got here, and that's the reason why they're going to play for a national title.
Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us from Omaha, Nebraska, Monday, Tuesday, and if necessary, Wednesday, to determine who is going to be the national champion in college baseball. Is it Vanderbilt? Is it Michigan? I know one of the big storylines that you will be covering is the relationship between the two head coaches, Tim Corbin and Eric Backich. Corbin kind of cut his teeth at Clemson. Backich was there as well. As a kind of a volunteer assistant, and then Corbin gets the gig at Vandy, and he says, no doubt, I'm bringing this guy along with me. And now here they are competing against one another. It's a heck of a story.
No, it's a great story. Those two were together, and you mentioned it. I mean, Backich goes over to Vanderbilt when Corbin's got the head job there, and he coached under him for 7 years at Vanderbilt. So he kind of learned a lot about from one of the best coaches there is in college baseball about how to perform. You know, he goes to Maryland, he does pretty good there, does Backich, but then he gets an opportunity at Michigan. First couple of years weren't great, but you go back and look at the last 5 years at Michigan, they've made three NCAA tournaments now, and they're certainly a team that's on the uptick. And again, the Northern schools, Jordy, you know this, it's hard to judge those schools early in the year. When you start talking about playing baseball up north in February and March and even parts of April, you see these teams and you go, they're okay, but I don't really know how good they are. Then you see them 6 weeks later and you go, wow, these teams are pretty good, because the reps start to catch up. They get outside, they get to take batting practice and ground balls, and look, they've been really good going down the stretch. And it's what we talk about in college baseball. The parity in college baseball now is phenomenal. And when you get hot at the right time, that's all you can say about Michigan. They didn't even win the Big Ten title. Indiana won the Big Ten title this year, but they finished second. They got some momentum in the conference tournament after losing game one. They win three in a row to get to the finals, and they get knocked off. So they got some confidence going. And, boy, they have not looked back since the NCAA tournament began. It's a really good story, and a story that you didn't see coming. And I tell you what, they're fun to watch right now. The team playing with a lot of enthusiasm right now, and they look really good.
Ben McDonald joining us. It's Vanderbilt versus Michigan. I know LSU fans wish it was LSU versus Michigan or Vanderbilt, but unfortunately. So Michigan seems to be a team that is really swinging the bats good, but Vandy has all that pitching. So what does Michigan have to do to have a chance in this thing, or do they have a legitimate chance?
No, I think they do. I mean, Tommy Henry's going for him tonight, the left-hander. And the last time out against Florida State, he threw 9 complete, only gave up 3 hits. It was a shutout. He didn't walk a batter and struck out 10. And, you know, he's a second-rounder, and he's been really good. I think it's a good matchup for Michigan because Vanderbilt has 5 left-handers in that lineup over there. So lefty versus lefty, it's a pretty good matchup. Now, the downside of that is Vanderbilt's offense is a top 10 offense in the entire country. It is very explosive. They lead the entire country in home runs with 97, I think. So Vanderbilt can swing it. And it seems like it's a different hero every day for Vanderbilt. I mean, Scott hit 2 home runs the other day. Martin hit 2 home runs from the leadoff spot for them. And, of course, you know about J.J. Bidet and the others. And so it's a deep lineup through 1 through 9. It's not a lineup that we get past the first 6, you can rest on 7, 8, 9. It's a lineup that can hurt you 1 through 9. There's some speed. They can steal some bases. And so it's a big-time challenge in a team, as you mentioned. When you talk about a team that's won 33 of their last 36 games, going through the schedule they went through, it's remarkable. You know, then you got Kumar Rocker. You know about him. He's been pitching, and he's kind of in the 2-hole for them behind Drake Fellows. He threw a no-hitter in the Super Regional, struck out 19. He backed that up with a really good outing the other day. And so it's a pitching staff, too, that's kind of coming to its own as of late. And a guy named Tyler Brown at the back end, you know, he's got 3 saves in Omaha. The only chink in the armor for Vanderbilt, and it's something to keep an eye on, they have trouble bridging from starter to get to Tyler Brown at the back end, their closer. Okay. Sometimes those guys have big arms for Vanderbilt, but they can be erratic back there. So if you see a pitcher get knocked out in the fifth or the sixth inning, you wonder how Vanderbilt's going to bridge that gap to be able to get to Brown. That's really the only question mark with Vanderbilt right now.
Ben McDonald with expert analysis. I mean, that rocker kid, the sky's the limit, right?
No doubt. I mean, Jordan, he's a kid that turned down. Some reports say $4 million he turned down to go to Vanderbilt. Could have been a top five pick in the country, but his mom really wanted him to go to college and get that experience. And he stepped on campus, and there were some struggles early for him, like it is for a lot of freshman pitchers. Sure. He got beat up a little bit early, but if you'll go back and look about the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season, he's certainly been one of the best pitchers in college baseball. When you can put him in the two-hole with a lot of experience you have around him with other starters, it's been magic for Vanderbilt as a player.
I'm not going to – you're announcing the game, so I'm not going to ask you for a prediction. All I want to know is, I mean, there's only so many games. You got a lot of downtime in Omaha. I mean, there's only so many steaks you can eat and zoos you can visit. So what have you been doing with your free time?
Well, you know, we had 2 off days in a row, which we weren't expecting. We were hoping to, you know, have a game, but Michigan blew through it, went undefeated in their side of the bracket. Right. Vanderbilt did the same thing, so we didn't have to play on Saturday. Sunday was always an off day, and so we kind of hit the reset button. But, you know, there's not a ton to do here, Jordy. I've eaten my share of steaks. I'm kind of staked out, to be honest with you. Been kind of walking around. My wife came in town a couple of days ago, which was nice, so we went and saw Toy Story 4 a couple of days ago, went and caught a movie and caught up with
Toy Story.
And so, it was really good. You know, one of my favorite movies, you know, go to see with my kids many years ago, and me and her kind of went to see it just because there wasn't a whole lot else to do. But, yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I'm kind of ready to get home, to be honest with you, but I'm also looking forward to, you know, these last 2 or 3 games. It's going to be wild. It's going to be a good time. Omaha has not disappointed this year. It's been very exciting. We've had some extremely exciting games. Matter of fact, I think every game, with the exception of one game,
has been
decided by 3 runs or less. And so it has been some very competitive baseball, and that's what you hope for on the biggest stage.
Do you need me to get on the tractor? I mean, you make your wife cut the grass. I mean, you need me while you're gone to cut the grass for you? I mean, the North 40?
She's going home today, so I'm going to try to get her back on that lawnmower if I can keep from getting it stuck. So she'll get back on it today and or tomorrow, rather. And so I'll be in hopefully in a few days. And so she'll stay busy doing that. And I think all is well at home right now.
Well, Ben will be on the call, and then he'll take the college hats off, and he'll put the Oreo hats on, and he'll be busy again. But always appreciate your time and your candor. Should be a heck of a series, but I don't see how anybody beats Vanderbilt this year. That's just me. I'm not asking you because you got to be neutral. But thank you, as always, my friend. Be safe.
Anytime, Jordy. Will do.
All right, buddy. Take care. Ben McDonald live from Omaha, Nebraska. Again, best of 3 series starting tonight. The mentor, Tim Corbin, and the established Vanderbilt Commodores, and the pupil, Eric Bakic, and the up-and-coming rising Michigan Wolverines. First one to win 2 wins it all. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 33 minutes after the hour, Monday edition, but we're still talking about the NBA because it's still fresh in our mind, and we're still in the fervor that is with the New Orleans Pelicans. Scott Kushner does it for a living for The Advocate, and I haven't gotten him on yet, but I need to get him on to talk about his thoughts on the draft, and even more importantly now, as we look ahead to free agency, the Pelicans with some money to spend. How are they going to spend it, and who are they going to spend it on? Scott, excited about the Pels? What kind of grade did you give them on draft night?
You know, I think just taking Zion gives you a pretty good grade on its own. That seems like hard to pass up there. I mean, I won't pretend to be able to prospect out and project out Jackson Hayes and the other guys just because it's a lot. I mean, it's very possible, you know, that they're over time those guys could develop into starters or whatever it might be. But at this point, I mean, it feels a crapshoot, and we'll see what they look like once they actually arrive in New Orleans and once they start getting playing. But for now, I mean, anybody who's trying to give you an educated guess on that is really doing nothing more than give you an educated guess.
No question. Zion doesn't play summer league, does he?
Zion will play summer league. Yeah, he'll be he'll play at least the first two games. I've been told, and then we'll see what they do from there. But I don't think I don't think Alvin Gentry would do that to the league and not play Zion, especially Alvin's good friend Warren Legarry, who runs summer league. I don't think he would do that to them by sitting him out. You know, he's healthy, he's ready to go, and I think they'd like to get him, you know, some time and put him in a Pelicans uniform.
I don't think he's going to be playing too much, though. We got to get him ready for when it counts. Anyway, look, we know about the draft picks, but there's a kid out there that they picked up that was undrafted. I'm pretty high on. I watched him play collegiately at Arizona State, and that's Zylan Cheatham. He's a forward, averaged 12 points, 10 rebounds. I think he's a kid that has a chance to stick with this club. I really do.
Yeah, a lot of people like him a lot. It's such a free for all after the draft. You know, I think in a lot of ways it's better to be, you know, undrafted than it is to go in one of those last 5 or 10 picks, because you do get the opportunity to kind of pick what team you want to go to, and then from there you can kind of, you know, gauge opportunities. And the Pelicans certainly have a ton of opportunities at the wing, which is where I think he'll eventually fit in if he does. So I think that's a pickup that could be a guy who makes a team, and certainly someone who is, you know, a two-way contract that makes a lot of sense. There's, you know, second-round picks, it's tough because there's no real guarantee there. I expect Silva, who is their second-round guy, to be stashed. I don't think he'll ever actually come over, or, you know, he might eventually come over, but I don't think it'll be anytime soon to play in the NBA. And so, you know, it's kind of an interesting spot that the way the second round is versus you have a little bit of leverage and negotiating power when you go after the draft. So, you know, that could have been a situation where the agent actually pushes teams not to draft their guy because they want to get an opportunity like he did, which was, you know, he's going to get every chance in the world in summer league and then as well as in training camp to catch on.
Scott Kushner, the Advocate, kind enough to join us. I read your article, and I agree with it 100%. There's a lot of pressure on Drew Holiday now. I mean, David Griffin, I know he's trying to take the pressure off of Zion by saying, look, this is Drew's team. He's the veteran. He's the leader. And he was terrific a year ago with Anthony Davis. Now we'll see, you know, how's he going to be this year? But they're putting a lot of pressure on his back.
Yeah, and I understand the purpose of it, which is, you know, you can't really count on a 19-year-old to carry a team to a bunch of wins. It's just really hard. Luka Doncic couldn't have been much better than he was last year. Trae Young couldn't have been a whole lot better than he was last year. And the teams are terrible. They're bad teams. And that's pretty typical when your best player is 19 years old. You're not going to win a lot. And no matter how good they are, because it comes down to, you know, in final minutes of games, it's experience, it's seasoning, it's understanding how to put away a team. And the NBA, you know, so many of those games decided in the last 4 or 5 minutes. So they're trying to say that this is Drew's team and that Drew needs to be the one who, you know, fills that void and takes responsibility and is the one they rely on in the last few minutes to win games. But I don't think it's going to stop anybody from, you know, thinking of Zion when they think of the Pelicans. People are not going to think Pelicans and think Drew Holiday. It's just not the way it works. But they want Drew to take ownership of that. They want Drew to be the person responsible. They want Drew to be the guy who steps in front of the microphone at the end of games and says, hey, this is what happened, X, Y, Z. You know, it is a different role, and I think over time, Zion will absolutely grow into that. And it's something Anthony Davis never really had. He was always kind of one of the oldest guys on the team because they never put true good veterans around him, and they never had guys really his – they're always like guys who like were 2 years older than him, but not guys who were 10 years older than him, who were good players. And I think they learned a lesson from that to a degree.
Scott Kushner, kind enough to join us. We're talking the Pelicans, we're talking the NBA, and now we're talking free agency. Pel's got some money to spend. They got to spend it wisely. They got to put people around Drew and Zion and Lonzo and Ingram and company. I'm going to let you be the vice president of basketball. You got about $30 million to spend, roughly, give or take a few one way or give or take a few the other. What do you consider the best way to go about it?
They need to add shooting. I think that's pretty clear at this point. They really have none of it at this point, even though they don't. There's not really an expectation that they make the postseason next year. I do think you can't run a team out there with absolutely no shooting. So when you've got some money in free agency, this seems to be a good time to do it. From a long-term planning perspective, and shoot, you know, this team seems to be all about long-term right now. Long-term, they have an opportunity to get some guys and take some money that teams don't want, and in the process pick up some picks alongside of it. So the same way that if you can remember when the Pelicans traded Omer Asik for Nico Mirotic, they also, you know, gave him a first-round pick, those kinds of things. You can do stuff like that. Now, maybe not to the degree that Asik was kind of unplayable, but you can take guys who are useful but maybe overpaid and take them off of teams' hands that are looking for a little bit more flexibility. So there are some options out there. I don't think they're going to go after, like, a super high-priced free agent. They technically have, I think, max money. They're right at the line, basically, to sign a max guy. No max guy is going to want to come play in New Orleans right now. So it makes a lot more sense to do a variety of deals, get some guys, maybe overpay them for a short term, or go out and trade for something that you can get additional assets alongside it, such as first-round picks going forward.
Any names come to mind that you think would be a good fit, that fills that shooting role, that comes in at a dollar value that is manageable? Is there anybody out there that you would like to see?
It's so hard to tell because I don't know what the market is on any of these guys at this point. Just because, like, you say, Harrison Barnes seems like a really good fit. And you're like, well, Harrison Barnes might make $28 million. Like, I have no idea what Harrison Barnes is going to make. Malcolm Brogdon, I think, is a really good fit. But who could command a ton of money? So it's one of those, I don't expect the Pelicans to do much on day one or two of free agency. I could see them waiting out the market a little bit and trying to, you know, figure out exactly, because they don't need someone to win now. The last few offseasons have been all about trying to improve for the next season. And this is a little bit different, where they can take advantage of some teams who are in position of trying to win for next season. And there are a lot of them who feel like they're pretty close to moving forward. And they have the benefit of patience, which means they have the benefit of kind of, you know, hindsight on where the market lands. They don't have to set the market. They can kind of judge it. So they have a little bit of benefit there. And we just don't know. I mean, J.J. Redick would be a great fit if you're talking just one-year guy, you know, but they're not going to go spend $20 million on J.J. Redick. So there's guys that fit really well. But they're going to go look for value, and then at the same time, they're going to see, you know, does a guy like Nick Batum in Charlotte, who is very much overpaid, but isn't on a terribly long deal, do you take that contract back from Charlotte, take their first-round pick with it, and then, you know, so you're gobbling up all that salary in exchange, you know, you get some flexibility there. But you're getting a guy who's overpaid, but it's not a long-term deal. So there are ways to go about it that don't necessarily make you significantly better right now, but can make you better in the long run and give you a little bit more of flexibility when you feel you're ready to compete. And that's probably the smartest way to go about it, but it's all not the most predictable way, as far as you got to kind of figure out what these other teams need to do first.
Scott, do you foresee all the players coming over in the trade from the Lakers? Do you see them on the roster opening day, or do you think there's a move to be made there?
I do. I think that those guys are all going to end up in New Orleans. I mean, the only one I could really see them moving is Brandon Ingram if he ends up being someone who's in high demand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his contract just comes up shortly. So he'll be a restricted free agent next year, which means you got to match him. And, you know, a guy who looks like him and has his pedigree, it doesn't even matter if his numbers are that great. He's going to command a lot of money in restricted free agency. Not to mention restricted free agency just ties you up next offseason that you're having to wait and having to match and all those kinds of things that can be laborious if it's not someone that you really care about. I don't think they care that much about Brandon Ingram because they haven't really seen him play, and he hasn't done a ton, so he might be more valued by someone else. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to move Lonzo. I don't think he has much market out there. I definitely don't think they're going to move Josh Hart. He doesn't seem to be someone who would fetch them anything more than what he's good at, which is a skill that they actually need, is they need that guy coming off the bench and helping and someone to play that role.
Right.
So I expect almost every one of those guys to really, you know, to be in New Orleans and give it a shot. If someone comes after Ingram in the next few weeks, sure, I could see that move taking place, but it would seem really unlikely. I think that trade is pretty well ironed out at this point.
Gotcha. Scott Kushner, the Advocate. Before we let you get out of here, I gotta ask you, you've been a part of this, you've been to the press conference, the Zion factor and the effect it's had on that city. Kind of summarize it from your viewpoint with your eyeballs on it. What do you think?
It's just crazy to think about the difference between number one and number two, right? It's like the level at which the Pelicans are getting talked about on national television, the ability to throw a party that 5,000 people or however many people showed up. It's still Fulton Square. I have Ann Manning's and all that kind of, I have no idea how many people that actually is. The Pelicans don't know how many people. The guess is around 5,000. It was packed, though. I mean, it was shoulder to shoulder. It was 100 degrees outside. And people were, you know, there, and they were in it. And that would not have happened for Ja Morant. It just wouldn't have. The Pelicans fans would have been excited. No. The people who actually watched this team for a couple of years and track this stuff every day, that's a pretty small group. Getting the national media attention, that trickles down. And I think that Zion is the biggest name we've seen come out in a long time. And we'll see whether or not his skills translate to the NBA level. I mean, the athleticism is an obvious world-class trait that he has, and the strength is way up there as well. But there's a lot that needs to be decided over the next few years. But what you can't argue is he is a name, and he is someone who is a brand and a recognizable person, and that alone really changes the zeitgeist for this team. That wasn't there. I mean, quite frankly, the thought that this was going to be, you get the number eight pick, so basically what they ended up with Jackson Hayes, you get someone like Jackson Hayes and add it to the trade for AD, and that was going to be what you built off of. And instead, you end up with Zion Williamson, and then everything else comes in, and it's just a totally different experience and a way to build and a vision that you can present to people. Because I would have been really hard to sell tickets for this next season had it been the other way around.
No question. Scott, thank you so much, man. When does free agency start? Pretty soon. I mean, real soon.
June 30th. Yeah, June 30th at 5 p.m. So used to be midnight on July 1st Eastern, and now they moved it into a time where actual normal human beings can follow the first few hours of free agency, which is probably the most popular the NBA ever is at any point in the year, is the first few hours of free agency, since nice is not happening in the middle of the night.
Where is Kevin Durant going to go? What's Kyrie Irving going to do? What is Kawhi Leonard going to do? And what is David Griffin going to do? How about that? That's your Mount Rushmore of free agency.
At least here. I mean, we'll see what
I'm
shaking out.
But that's all that counts.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot to be decided. There's tons of teams with max space. There's not a lot of max players. The recruiting is going to be really intense. The decision-making, like just the length of time, is going to be really interesting. There's so many balls up in the air. It's one of the more interesting free agency periods we've seen in a long time.
No question. You'll be right in the middle of it. Scott, thank you so much, buddy. I greatly appreciate it. Have a great rest of your afternoon and evening.
Absolutely, Jordy. Talk to you soon.
All right, buddy, you take care. Enjoyed that. Yeah, it's going to be June 30th. Not very far away, man. It's going to be interesting. And how long and how quickly will some of these players make franchise-altering decisions? We shall see. We'll be back to wrap up our number one next. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Minutes after the hour, brought to you in part by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything for your travel needs, whether you're going 550 or 500 miles, it's all there available for you at DC's Little Capital Exxon, including that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Fabulous cheeseburger, just fabulous. So if you're interested in heading to Houston come February, end of February, beginning of March of the year 2020, stop off at DC's, get you some of those cheeseburgers, and head up to the annual Shriners Hospitals for Children College Baseball Classic at Minute Maid Park. It's the 20th annual one, and they announced their field for the 2020 event. It'll feature all Big 12 and SEC matchups over the three-day weekend. From the Big 12, Baylor, Oklahoma, and Texas. From the SEC, Arkansas, Missouri, and LSU. They're considering one of the best in the 20-year history. Now, they're smart. They're smart. They know that LSU, with the faction in Houston, they're going to go watch the Tigers play. 2017, the highest attendance in tournament history. 53,000 fans entered the turnstiles of Minute Maid Park that year. LSU was in that field, and now they'll be back in the field for this one. So that's always something fun to look at. LSU and Texas will play on Friday night, February 28th, with a 7 p.m. first pick. So that will get things kickstarted if you're an LSU baseball fan. February 28th through March the 1st of the year 2020. Not bad. Not bad at all. USA Soccer, again, wins today 2-1. They just keep on rolling. They're good. And again, it's free agency talk. There's nothing much else out there happening other than Major League Baseball and the College World Series tonight. So, again, Michigan, the biggest surprise of the College World Series against the team that everybody thought would be where they are at this date, which is Vanderbilt. So, I just don't know how anybody's going to beat the Commodores this year. I just don't see it. But, you know, you got to play between the white lines and Stranger things have happened. Quiet weekend as far as LSU football recruiting is concerned. No new commitments. Time will tell. Time will tell on that. Give it some time. So far, so darn good. Tremont Waters was introduced to the city of Boston and their media, and he's all smiles. He's close to home. That's his team. He's in good shape. He's loving it and living the dream. So I think he'll stick around. As long as he's good in the locker room, he's got enough skills. He's not going to be a big, heavy minute player. They'll send him down to the G League. He'll probably hook up against Naz Reid. But, hey, getting paid, right? They're getting paid. All right, coming up, hour number two, Hot Topics with the aforementioned producer extraordinaire CD, and one football publication has come out with their prediction of every game of every SEC team. We'll tell you what they think about the Tigers, and do they pick them to finally, finally get off the schneid and beat the Crimson Tide? We'll let you know in hour number two. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station. Come on back. One more to
live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two. Happy Monday, this June 24th. Hope you're having a great day. Thanks so much for making us a part of it. Big hour coming your way. Hot topic shortly. LSU football prediction from one college football news fish wrap. And Nick Fontenot will join us. We'll talk some football. We'll talk Raging Cajuns. We'll talk LSU. We'll talk New Orleans Saints. And now, as we always do, it'll be a, boy, what a special day it was 27 years ago. Man. When you hear it, you'll love it, I promise you. Plus, some birthday wishes as well. It's all coming your way here shortly. But we begin hour number two every day the same way. We take our daily walk around the sports water cooler with CD. So, Mr. Domain, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
So how did you spend your sports weekend, Mr. Clint? Wasn't much going on, was there?
There really wasn't much going on, Jordy. I mean, unless you're a big fan of the football, you can wind up probably chalking this weekend up to, you know, taking care of those honeydews. That way you can get them out of the way right before football season
there
gets started,
go.
Right, Jordy? But, you know, I think one thing that maybe you didn't necessarily
there
see,
you go.
But you might have heard, Jordy, over the weekend with the St. Louis Cardinals for the first time since 2011, your boy, Albert Pujols, made his return to St. Louis over the weekend and got
yes.
a home run in the process. I know
yes.
you're a big Redbird fan, Jordy, so how amazing was that seeing him back in action the way that, and he still wound up looking pretty decent after what felt like forever. He just wasn't able to kind of get things done. He was overpaid and overrated. But once he gets into Busch Stadium, the dude's an absolute monster.
And he ran those bases pretty quick and very, very fitting and very classy of the Cardinal fans to have him come out of the dugout, give him a curtain call, standing ovation. That was pretty good. Classy, classy done. By the Cardinals, and Pujols looked great for one. You know, I don't know how much longer he's going to play, but he sure looked good for one day. So good for him, good for the Cardinal fans. It was just a classy moment all the way around.
I feel he could kind of be wrapping up his career. It just felt like one of those farewell tour type things, Jordy. But here's something interesting that I saw pop up online. We're talking about Albert Pujols. Do you know he still holds the record for most home runs inside Busch Stadium as a Cardinal?
I kind of figured that, yeah.
It's crazy
there
are,
but man, he was there for a while, and in his prime, he was pretty darn good, man.
111 home runs, Jordy. Second place is Matt Holliday with 88. So it's safe to say that record's going to stand for a long, long time.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously Stan the Man wasn't playing in that ballpark,
yeah.
So take it with a grain of salt. But no, Pujols, he'll be in the Ring of Honor for the Cardinals one day.
Meanwhile, you look at the other side of things. From my perspective as an Astros fan, it's been a rough last, like, 7 days, losing seven of their last eight. Jordy finally bounced back yesterday thanks to a Tyler White grand slam and Yordan Alvarez doing Yordan Alvarez things. Jordy, you know, from 1,000 miles away, what was your perspective of how the Astros have been performing as of late? What do you think has been the big issue for them?
I just think it's baseball. I think it's I think you get a little lethargic. I think you're away from home, and things were going great for a while, and sometimes that worm turns a little bit, but they got off the schneid last night. They're too good of a team to be in a tailspin for too long. I know they, what, lost 7 games in a row? That's not going to happen very often, I can promise you. They'll be in the thick of things. As to what happened, I think it's always a combination of lack of timely hitting. I think it's a combination of your pitchers not delivering, your bullpen failing you. It's just a combination of everything. But I just think it's a long season, man. It's going to happen to everybody at some point in time. It just does.
And Jordy, you know, it's a grind. Hopefully they can get back into it tomorrow when they open up their 3-game set against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Jordy, who definitely feel like they've underwhelmed. But moving over to the world of college football, we're talking about how it's definitely been pretty low key for LSU and the Cajuns. Well, for one player in particular, Jordy, it's been weird because you have Asa Martin, who played for Auburn. He transferred out and went to Miami. He transferred over there at the end of the season and jump shipped over to the U. Now, apparently, a per source is coming from Matt Zenitz of AL.com. I think this is a pretty reliable source. Jordy, he's re-entered the NCAA transfer portal. I didn't know that was actually possible, that you could re-enter the transfer portal within a year.
Can you do it twice?
Apparently, yes. It's ridiculous.
I didn't think you could do that either. Man. I did not know that. That's news to me. I thought it was one and done, and that was it.
Like one at least a year, you know.
Interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know that either until like about 20 minutes ago when that popped up on the Twitter feed. I was like, what is going on?
You got who wants the kid now? He can't ever make up his mind. Are you going to take a chance on somebody like that? He may find the pickings pretty slim. He may say, you know what, you're looking much better to me.
Yeah.
I'd be careful if I were he.
It'd be a lot like some of the LSU players that have entered the name in the transfer portal and just, you know what, kind of pulled it out. It's like the hokey pokey. You put your left foot in, you put your left foot out of the transfer portal.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Jordy, moving
absolutely. Up. So, very well said. Very well said.
All right, Jordy, moving over, obviously, I think we got to talk a little bit of the U.S. women's national team wound up having a little scare earlier today up against Spain. It really showed, I was talking about it on Saturday's show, was that Spain definitely more of a possession-oriented team as opposed to what they've looked like in the past. That was probably a big reason why. But, Jordy, while you were kind of keeping tabs on that, were you concerned about this game possibly going to extra time like we've seen so many games over the last weekend go?
Oh, God, I don't know about that. I didn't follow it that closely, to be honest with you. But all I know is USA scored 2 goals, Spain scored 1. Next, moving on to Paris. I don't know. Rapinoe, I don't know what she did to her hair, but it's kind of looking purplish.
Yeah.
So, anyway, look, they're undefeated. They're really, really good. And they got a chance to win another World Cup. Good for them. If I'm on the men's side, I'm feeling like a little inferior. I mean, see, the women are much better than the men.
Oh, I think they've known that for quite a while, Jordy. Let's be honest there for a moment. They've known that for quite a while.
I'll say this.
Team USA, mind you, they played Trinidad and Tobago, but they looked dominant on Saturday in the Gold Cup, and I believe this was their second matchup in the Gold Cup, which is it's basically all the North American teams facing off against each other and some, like, it's basically all the American teams except for the South America because they have their own whole ordeal with their cup as well going on during the summer.
Yeah. Look, that's such a big to-do globularly, and it's nice to have a team that represents the United States that's competitive and has a chance to be the best in the world. We haven't had that for a long, long time until this women's group got together. That still some of them are there with Alex Morgan and company. It's nice to be a factor on the national stage. So good for them. I hope they win it all. I really do. That'd be great.
It'd be amazing, Jordy. And a couple more things before we get out of here. First off, the New York Knicks don't know how to do things right, Jordy, because they wound up banning New York Daily News accessed a post-draft press conference, and the NBA just fined them $50,000 for not allowing them in there. It feels like the city of New York, which seems like to be the media hub of the United States of America, has definitely got a lot of bad a bad press, because you also had recently the Mets, I think, GM slash coach, or whatever you want to call it, get in an argument with a media member. So it's really showing how maybe New York and maybe Zion Williamson dodged a bullet there, because it felt like he was having all the fun in the world talking to New Orleans reporters as opposed to New York reporters.
Well, look, at least the Mets called the reporter and apologized and said, look, you should have the freedom to feel comfortable in our locker room and do your job. The Knicks, on the other hand, just, hey, it's an invite-only event. Really? To talk to R.J. Barrett and Ignas Brazdikakis? Are you kidding me? Good for the NBA, finding the Knicks $50,000. Jimmy Dolan is just, man, he's got to go.
Yeah.
He'll never go, but he's got to go.
He's got to go,
Jordy. He's awful.
Just I mean, you can about imagine, like, if you had, you know, imagine if, like, let's say 103.7 the game, if we were able to make it to the Zion Williamson introductory press conference and everybody was able to come, but 103.7 the game. Imagine how BH we would be if we could be a part of that.
Oh, Chuck Wood would just blow a gasket, man.
Oh, trust me, I think we'd all blow a gasket.
The wall. No, you can't do that. Yeah, you just can't do that. So Jimmy Dolan, once again, sends the Daily News a message. In reality, the only message he's sending out that he's a bully who retaliates against legitimate news outlets that publishes content that he doesn't like. You say something bad about the Knicks, he bans you. Well, that's, it goes against the Constitution of the United States. Freedom of speech, right? So, come on. James Dolan, what a bum. I'm sorry. It's just a bum. Here's your Hot Topics for the day. Brought to you by, certainly not a bum, certainly the best, the Biard family with Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. They use only the best ingredients, the finest spices, the finest peppers. They mix it all together. And for nearly 90 years, they've been putting out the greatest product, and that is Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef Hot Sauce with you wherever you go. Put it in your car, put it in your purse, put it in your jacket, whatever. Look, everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. They won't mind at that restaurant. They deliver the food, and you're good to go. Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, right there. Bring you Hot Topics each and every day. All right, one football news organization. We won't ban them for what they think, whether good, bad, or indifferent. How do they project the LSU football season going? We'll tell you that story next on the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 18 minutes after the hour. This is the time of the year when all these predictions start trickling in. We're brought to you by Hooters. Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Daily specials, right? Cocktail hour. Always have drink specials as well. Major League Baseball game, the College World Series tonight between Michigan and Vanderbilt. Go to Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey. Bring the ball club. Bring your Little League team and go watch the ball game and get some great food as well. Hooters just makes you happy. So 11 SEC teams went bowling last season. Five of them came from the SEC West. Missouri not eligible this year for the postseason. It's really, really important for Arkansas, right, and Ole Miss, the two West teams who didn't go bowling this year, to clean things up in non-conference play so they can get to at least six wins and get to a bowl game. College Football News has come out with their predictions for each team in the SEC. Each game, win or lose. And they've done that. So I'll go through their their projection for the 2019 LSU football team. Of course, LSU finished last year 10-3. They won the bowl game. August 31st, they've got LSU beating Georgia Southern, setting up the big matchup September 7th at Texas. College Football News thinks that LSU is going to win that game to be 2-0. So then they've got Northwestern State, 3-0, Vanderbilt on the road, 4-0, before they head to their first open date of the season. So 4-0, they'll take September 28th off. They'll come back and take on Utah State. I like the fact that they're taking on a non-conference team after their open date. Okay, I like that. They've got LSU beating Utah State. Then October 12th really starts the SEC schedule in full. Florida finally coming to Tiger Stadium. Finally. Seems like forever and a day, doesn't it? They've got LSU beating Florida on October 12th. October 19th, Tigers head to Starkville. And the College Football News organization has LSU losing to Mississippi State. Interesting. Tigers bounce back, according to College Football News, with a win against Auburn on October 26th, which is the last game prior to their next open date on November 2nd. Now, we all know who LSU plays in November after an open date, and that's Alabama, this time in Tuscaloosa. Now, they don't give scores or anything like that. They just give wins or losses. College Football News has LSU yet again losing to Alabama. But LSU closes out the year with wins at Ole Miss, home wins against Arkansas and Texas A&M. So College Football News has LSU going 10-2 overall, 6-2 in the SEC. So how does that fare to the other teams in the West? Well, according to College Football News, they really are high on Alabama. I just don't see it again. Somebody's going to beat Alabama. But they've got Alabama going unscathed, 12-0 overall, 8-0 in SEC play. Arkansas, 5-7 overall, 1-7 in SEC play. The pressure will be on Chad Morris. All the pressure in the world on Gus Malzahn. Last season they went 8-5. College Football News has Auburn going 4-4 in the SEC, 8-4 overall. If that is in fact the case, Gus Malzahn will get fired. He won't survive another 8-win season. It's just not going to happen. Let's see. Mississippi State. To you Raging Cajun fans, College Football News has State beating the Raging Cajuns in New Orleans at 11 a.m. on August the 31st. The biggest win of their season would be the win that they've predicted at home against LSU. College Football News has Mississippi State finishing 4-4 in the league, 8-4 in the SEC. Ole Miss, 2-6 in the SEC, 5-7 overall. That's not good. And the other team that's really interesting to me is Texas A&M. College Football News has A&M losing at home to Alabama, losing the last two games of the regular season at Georgia and at LSU. Oh, circle that date, November 30th. Circle that one. That's a tough way to close out a season, at Georgia and at LSU. So College Football News has A&M finishing 5-3 in the league, 9-3 overall. So in the rankings, it would be Alabama 1, LSU 2, Texas A&M 3, Mississippi State and Auburn tied for 4th. We'll see if it comes to fruition. How surprised are you that one predicting entity has LSU losing at Mississippi State? And what's more important? Is it more important to get a win over Texas early in the season or get a win at Mississippi State? I know Mississippi State's in your league, If you win at Mississippi State, that means you would be undefeated in league play, building up to another monumental matchup at Alabama. Well, you want to win them all, obviously. I just think the significance of that Texas game is so important to the rest of the season. So give me the win at Texas. I know it's not a league game, but it's early in the season. I think it's a trendsetter for the rest of the year. Again, I like the fact if you're going to have an open date, don't be coming up against a huge big team like a Florida or an Auburn. Kind of work your way gradually back into it. Take on Utah State. I'm not saying Utah State's terrible, but they're not Florida. They're not Auburn. They're not Texas A&M. So if you can be 4-0 heading to that open date, three givens, Georgia Southern, Northwestern State, and at Vandy, if you can get that Texas game, boy, what a great start. Then you get Utah State. That's 5 in a row. And then you got the revenge factor against Florida. I think it makes for a great season. I really do. Would you be satisfied at 10-2? Would you be satisfied 10-2 with yet another loss to Alabama? Or would that just be unimaginable, unfathomable, hateful? You couldn't stand it. You couldn't stand it. I don't know. Depends upon beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I still don't think Alabama's going unscathed. I'm sorry. I just don't. I know they're the cream of the crop, and I know they play nobody. Duke, New Mexico State, Southern Miss, Western Carolina. I mean, they're big. They got to play at South Carolina, at Texas A&M, at Mississippi State, and at Auburn. They play Tennessee in the East, as always. You know, they play Duke in Atlanta. LSU plays Texas in Austin. You do the math on that one. You figure that one out. So I just don't see Alabama going unscathed. I just don't. But time will tell. Time will tell. We'll keep the theme football in this hour. Nick Fontenot, freelance writer in the Acadiana area, will talk about the Raging Cajuns. Has Billy Napier won the fan base over? Can they start packing Cajun Field? How many Cajuns are going to show up in the Superdome? Opening game, Mississippi State. I like the schedule this year. It tells me a lot about what the Cajuns are doing. And I'll tell you why when we talk with Nick Fontenot next. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Hey, we welcome you back. The Jordy Helfrich Show on this Monday, the 24th day of June. Honestly, this is the time of the year in this business where, I mean, yeah, soccer is going on. The World Cup, okay. But everything from LSU to the Raging Cajuns is very, very, very quiet. So it's time to kind of to look ahead and think about what's coming in football season right around the corner. It'll be here before you think it. I thought I'd call up my buddy Nick Fontenot, and we'd go back and forth on some things. Nick, good afternoon, buddy. How have you been?
Hey, Jordy, how are you? I'm good.
Football season right around the corner. It's year two. We'll cover the Cajuns and the Tigers. We'll do a little college football talk here. Year two for Billy Napier. He kind of hit the ground running. But now he's had a full recruiting, a little bit of recruiting season under his belt. He's had 1 year in which to implement his system, his way of doing things. Is this a program you see heading in an upward fashion?
Yeah, I definitely do. Anytime you talk to some of the players from the team, or you interview them, or get them in a one-on-one situation, the first thing they say is how completely different it is from the previous staff, and how everything's regimented, and they have routines, and everything is just set up for them to succeed. And I think that's the biggest thing that Napier brought in year one. I think they might have overachieved a little bit last year and did some things that a lot of people were thinking they might not be capable of doing. But with that, you know, that comes these expectations this year to do a little bit more. And I think Napier is the right guy to kind of get them to that next level.
Yeah, he's got that mentality. He's learned from some of the good ones. And look, they get right out of the gate in a hurry, taking on Mississippi State in the Superdome. It's an early game at 11 o'clock. But the schedule, I mean, you know, it is what it is, right? And State's going to present quite a payday, let's be honest with it. But after that, you know, it's a doable schedule, I think, for year two for the Cajuns. I really do.
Yeah, that's the thing about the Sun Belt Conference is that usually you have one, two, maybe three teams that are formidable opponents, and the rest of them, you know, should be pretty winnable games. If not winnable, you should be at least in the game with a chance to win. And so I think that's what the conference schedule kind of sets up that way. And then with Mississippi State, I think it presents an opportunity, maybe not to win the game, but if they can at least be competitive. And that was the one thing that Coach Husband never did was beat that Power 5 program. And it's been a while since the Cajuns as a whole have beaten the Power 5 program. Mm-hmm. And so I think if they could somehow pull that first one off, that would be really big for the Napier area, the Napier era as a whole, to just say, hey, look, it's only year two. We've already done something that the last guy didn't do, and the last guy's probably the most successful coach they've ever had. So,
yeah,
I mean, yeah, if I were to pick the Mississippi State game, I would definitely pick the Bulldogs. But if the Cajuns could somehow do it, man, that would be so big.
You know, last year they had these two big money games, and it's like, man, it can be demoralizing too. Yeah, the money's great, but you get beat up. They only have one this year, and that's Mississippi State, and it's basically in their backyard in New Orleans. So they're not having to go to Starkville. They're not going to Tuscaloosa. They're not going to Gainesville. I kind of like that. I kind of like the fact, okay, we're going to play the Liberty. We're going to play Ohio. We're going to play Texas Southern besides our normal conference schedule. So I think they're going about this thing the right way, and they're hoping that the fan base catches on and they start winning games and they start filling up that Cajun field.
Yeah, you're right about that, Jordy. It kind of sucks as a fan when you go into a game and you know you have no chance. Like when they went to Tuscaloosa last year, and the fans are, you know, on Twitter saying, well, at least we covered the 55-point spread with a touchdown in the last minute. It's like, man, those kind of things are, you know, they're half funny, but they're also half truth, and you just kind of cringe when you read them. So you're definitely right about that. That game being in the Superdome, you're probably going to have a lot of Cajuns fans there, and it should be a 50-50 house, if not, you know, maybe a little bit more on the Mississippi State side. But I definitely agree with your point. Not having to go to those tough places, scheduling teams like Liberty, Ohio, it gives them an opportunity to pick up a couple of wins before they get in the conference.
That's what they need, man. They don't need to get beat up. They need to beat some other people up and get some gimmies and get some wins and get this fan. Because has Napier won this fan base over, or is he still on a kind of a wait-and-see period in the Cajun fans' minds?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's definitely won them over. I think last year with them, you know, making the Sun Belt championship game and then going to that bowl game, I think the fans were like, "Oh, okay, Napier. You know, I see you doing work. I see you maybe getting us on the right path to where we want to be." I think he could take a big step in this year if they were to win eight, maybe nine games. You know, maybe if they come out and they compete, and if we get into the fourth quarter of that Mississippi State game and you're down by one score and you at least have a little bit of hope, or you can maybe win that game or at least compete in that game and not get blown out and not just get demoralized and be down, you know, five scores by the time it's halftime. And then you kind of build on that momentum and go forward. So I don't know if he's won them over 100%, but I don't think it's going to take much for them to come around.
Take me back when Hutchbeth was at his apex and they were winning those nine games for three straight seasons. What were the crowds like at Cajun Field? What were they like?
Well, they never sold out, but they were raucous and they were big, and the fan base was hungry. And Husband came in with high energy, and everybody rallied around him, and he just kind of rallied the fan base. And the fans did show up. They were doing 25, 28, 29,000. For you all, that was good. You know, the previous guy, Ricky Bustle, they were getting maybe 6, 7. You know, they weren't even pushing 10,000. And then Husband comes in, and they're going over 20 grand in every game. And they're winning 9, and they win all those bowl games. And then it just kind of tapered off, just as most coaches
do. What happened? And then, what happened there? Here's a high-energy guy. You think he's going to just keep it rolling. What happened? What was the demise of Mark Hutchbeth?
I think he lost a lot of the fans whenever they had some locker room issues, and a couple of the kids maybe did some things that weren't appropriate, and he didn't come down on them hard enough, and then he just kind of lost the fan base and lost the big donors, and they were ready for a change. But I never really thought he was that bad of a coach, or that his results were that bad. It just seemed like he maybe stayed his course a little bit too long, and they're ready for a change. And then Napier came in with the exact opposite mindset of Hutchman. He's very calm. He's very laid back. He's very business-like. Mm-hmm. He comes in, he's just do-your-job type of guy, kind of like Saban. And that's the type of guy that he's learned from. And so it's just two different things. And I think it's taken a while for the fans to be like, okay, it's just a different coach. But if he can win some games, you know, winning cures everything. So.
Yeah. And that takes us back to the schedule that they've laid out. I just think it's brilliant on their part. Now they got to go out and do their job, but they certainly have winnable games on the schedule that can create some excitement for the fan base. But it always comes down to that one position on the field. Do the Cajuns have a quarterback?
Well, I think they've narrowed it down to a couple of guys, and I don't really know if they've made their decision yet. I know last year it was very up in the air, and it was actually the last couple of years under Husband, and then the first year under Napier, it was just like you go in the spring and you have no idea who the guy is. So hopefully they can narrow it down to a singular guy, and then he can go into the spring and go into the fall as being the guy, and then you could just, you know, take your lumps with that one guy. But I feel like that might have hampered them the last couple of years, where you got two or three guys and you don't know who it is, and you start a guy and there's that guy's in the back in the wings, just, and the fans are just watching him and saying, hey, put that guy in, you know. So hopefully they can just pick a guy and just roll with him.
A little bit down the interstate, there's no problem. Everybody knows who the quarterback is going to be, and I think the expectations for this LSU football season are with the momentum from what they accomplished a year ago, winning the bowl game, the way they're going about with their recruit, they finished sixth in the country, the way they're going about their recruiting business, the new recruits that are coming in, you got Joe Burrow solidified at quarterback, you got the influx of Joe Brady bringing the Sean Payton influence to a stagnant type of an offense. Wow. I mean, how'd you like that pressure, Edo, if you were that? My goodness. I mean, they expect to win every game, including Alabama.
Yeah, everything you said is accurate about that, Jordy, but it's a one-game season, man. I mean, it's Alabama. I mean, you just circle it on the calendar, and everything just points to there, and that's it. I mean, that's the game you got to win. I got a feeling if they were to go 8-4 but win Alabama, that would be a successful season. You know, it's just,
isn't that amazing?
It's such a bad taste in your mouth to lose to Alabama every year. And the hatred and the disdain for Alabama grows and grows with every loss. And it's like, you got to get that off your back. And, you know, I agree with everything you said. I just, it's a one game season. You got to win that game.
Nick Fontenot, kind enough to join us. I got to ask you this. I've been saying this for years now, and I just want your opinion. I've always believed that having a bye game, a bye week before Alabama is terrible for LSU. It's too much of a buildup. The fan base gets into a fervor, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, my God, the sky is falling. It's over. And then you got to play a game the next week. And if you win that game, great, but it just seems like the season has come to an end. I've always believed play your schedule, play Alabama, then take a bye week. Are you in agreement or disagreement?
Yeah, I agree with you there. And not only that, but in the last however long I can remember, Alabama also does the same thing. They take the bye week at the exact same time. So you're playing Nick Saban with 2 weeks to prepare for your team. And, I mean, normally – Alabama has a little bit more talent at the skill positions, and so you're giving them 2 weeks to just exploit those matchups and everything. It doesn't work in your favor. So I would just play the schedule like you said, and hopefully Alabama would do the same thing, and then you just play the game on a normal 1 week basis, because giving Saban 2 weeks before that game is just brutal.
And I think we overthink it. I really do. I think it's just, it just puts an inordinate amount of pressure on everybody. And the fans, I mean, it's absurd. It's absurd. So I know you say it's a one-game schedule, but Tigers got to go to Austin, Texas. To me, that's the season maker or the season breaker.
Yeah, definitely. And LSU's had that game a couple of times, you know, where they had the Oregon game, and they've had that a couple of years ago. And they've had that game where, you know, it can really give some big momentum. And, I mean, Texas, you know, everybody keeps saying Texas is back or Texas is trying to come back. But if Texas somehow beats LSU, they're going to be thinking they're back, and LSU's going to be an uphill climb heading towards a – towards some sort of SEC championship or a national championship if they were to drop that game. So, yeah, they definitely need to come out focused to play Texas and Austin.
No question about that. Nick Fontenot, kind enough to join us, does a great job freelancing as a writer. Hire this guy. I mean, he does everything, and he does a terrific job of it. A little bit further down, we go to the NFL ranks and the Saints. Here's another team, kind of like LSU. It's either Super Bowl or bust, right?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, after the heartbreak 2 years in a row, but, I mean, last year's heartbreak was just – I mean, I'm still kind of not over it as a Saints fan. And so for them to have to bounce back as a team and you know, not have a first-round pick and make these moves and have to find – you know, you have all these players that need to be signed and these contracts coming up. It's like it seems to be all culminating into this year. And so, you know, you got to get it done. Drew's at the end, and these younger guys need to get paid. So this is like the perfect season to say, hey, look, let's get this ring. Let's get this last ring. Send Drew out on a wave of white horse or whatever you want to do. Get the last championship, and then we can try to move forward from there.
It's time for another parade besides Mardi Gras parades in the Crescent City. We got to have a Super Bowl celebration parade like we did 10 years ago. Hard to believe. I think Jared Cook is going to be tremendous. I just got a gut feeling. The tight end acquisition from the Oakland Raiders coming over, I mean, he's the best the Saints have had since Jimmy Graham, and I think he's going to put up big numbers, and I think that's going to help what I believe is not the greatest group of wide receivers that a team could have, but serviceable after Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I agree there, and I was actually predicting that they wouldn't even make the playoffs before they signed Cook, just because, not because they didn't have a talented team, but just because of the hangover from the heartbreak of the Rams game, and it was just going to be a tough season for them to even come out and make the playoffs. Then they signed Cook, and I changed my tone because of exactly the things you said. He's just such a weapon for Drew Brees, and every time Drew Brees has had that tight end weapon, they've done well. The Super Bowl year, they had Shockey, then they got Glam, and they had all those successful years. So I think Cook's going to fall right in line and become that go-to target for Brees, open up the passing game for, like you said, the serviceable receivers, let Michael Thomas get his and do good things. So I do think Jared Cook is going to be a big proponent for them winning, being successful, and potentially winning a championship.
Nick Fontenot, that was fun, man. Thank you for sharing some insight on the Cajuns, the Tigers, and the Saints. We'll do it again, my friend, but you keep on keeping on, all right? And we'll talk soon. Thank you.
I did my best, Jordy. Thanks for having me.
You were awesome, buddy. You were awesome. All right, we'll take a final time out of the day. We'll come back. It's time for what a history lesson it was 27 years ago. A league was never the same after what happened on this day. Plus some birthday wishes and setting the stage for tomorrow. It's all coming your way next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Hey, welcome back. Final, USA 2, Spain 1 in the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup. They just keep on keeping on. Rapinoe, some penalty kicks, getting it done. It's off to Paris next for Team USA. So Congratulations to them. Free agency right around the corner, NBA. Still, it's the biggest buzzword out there to see what the Pelicans are going to do. And we'll continue the conversation with that as Grant Hughes will join us tomorrow. He is our national feature analyst from Bleacher Report, and he will talk to us about the Pelicans and free agency, and we'll get his assessment of the draft. Everybody's given the Pels, and hey, they got the best player out there. So how can you go wrong with that, right? How can you go wrong with that? Okay, let's do a little history lesson time, because I've got two of them for you. We'll start with the latest, which was on this day, June 24th, the year 2010. The longest match in Wimbledon history. Remember, Nicholas Mahut and John Isner battled for 11 hours and 5 minutes over the span of 3 days. It's never been done before. I don't know if it'll ever be done again. Isner won in the final set in the tiebreaker, 7-6, over Mahut, the longest match in Wimbledon history. And then, on this day, June 24th, the year was 1992, 27 years ago, the Orlando Magic, with the number one pick in the NBA draft, selected from LSU, Shaquille O'Neal. And the game was never the same. Hall of Famer, he was something. I wish he and Penny had never broken up. I mean, he had a bunch of breakups, right? He and Penny, whoop, gone. He and Kobe, whoop, gone. But Shaq was something else. How he did the things that he did with the body that he had was remarkable. I can still remember him coming to LSU. I can still remember him down in the gym armory, downstairs, the dungeon we called it. Skinny, just a young, skinny guy. And Stanley Roberts was taking him to school. But Shaq had that inner drive, that will to succeed that was second to none. Second to none. So 27 years ago today, Shaq drafted by the Orlando Magic. All right, birthday celebration time. If today is your birthday, June 24th, man, I hope you're having a great day. I know it's a Monday, and I know it's been kind of a dreary-looking day, but hey, it's your birthday, so make the very, very best of it. And all of us here at 103.7 The Game wish you a very, very happy birthday. You share it with the likes of, let's see, happy 36th birthday. I used to not like the guy, but I've grown to really like him. I have grown to appreciate his skills. J.J. Redick, the former Dukie, now with the Philadelphia 76ers. Man, would he be a nice pickup to shoot the rock alongside Zion. But J.J. Redick celebrating a birthday today on the tail end of his career. Also, happy birthday to many consider the greatest soccer player in the world today. Messi. Lionel Messi is 33 years old today. So happy birthday to them. And more importantly, happy birthday to you. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. If it's your anniversary, well, happy anniversary. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks to Ben McDonald, live from Omaha, Nebraska, for tonight's start of the College World Series Championship Series, Michigan versus Vanderbilt. To Scott Kushner of The Advocate, I can't get enough of this NBA talk. And Nick Fontenot, as we kind of talked a little bit about the Cajuns, the Tigers, and the Saints. So many expectations for all three of them, maybe at different levels, but still great expectations for all. Yes, and especially LSU and the Saints. Oh, man, what a year it could be. CD, thank you for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners that make it possible. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helper. Stay thirsty.